You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more.
To it, talking about Game 1, what did you see from Aiden Hill that was good or bad for Florida Panthers if they're trying to score on this guy?
The good, obviously, we saw the desperation, the stick save. And listen, like, that's one of those where it's like, you know, some goalies get a little technical, and when things get that out of control, they may not have that compete. Now, I would argue most guys that get to the National Hockey League level need to have that degree of compete, that never give up, to sort of get out and get extended and make that type of save, but it's not necessarily innate. And so there's been a bunch of articles written about, you know, the things he's done over the years to sort of develop that. How much of it is instinctual, how much of it is just, you know, in his DNA, and how much of it is, you know, the battle he has in the game of last puck. You know, you can develop it over time. The bad is the fact he had to. And listen, like, it was a good play, and it wasn't a bad read to make a push over to Tkachuk. But I think Aiden Hill at his best is not outside of his post to that degree. He's not putting himself in a situation where he has to scramble to that degree. We saw it in the wraparound goal. I would argue that he was probably expecting a little better support on the backside. He commits to the short side to make sure he doesn't get beat short side high on the initial chance by Staal. And if you saw two of the three guys skating back the other way, actually went straight-legged, whereas a couple more pumps, and they could have easily beaten the wraparound, gotten and helped him out on the wraparound side. So I don't blame that entirely on him, sort of trusting your guys to do their job, and he was let down. But again, where is he? He's outside of his post. And Aiden Hill at his best under sort of Sean Burke's tutelage there in Vegas this year is rarely, if ever, outside of his post. And I thought there were times in that game, obviously not enough of them for the Florida Panthers, but times where they established that forecheck and that pressure and created plays back and forth below the goal line and, you know, sort of around behind the net that had Aiden scrambling and moving around his crease behind the play. And so that's a little nerve-wracking, and maybe it's just, you know, speaking of nerves, maybe that's all it is. And he'll be more settled in this game. But based on what I saw, if you're Florida, I think you could look at that tape and say, hey, we just need to generate opportunities off of these type of plays rather than just continuing to generate those cycles, because we've got him behind the way we're moving the puck around. We just need to now get pucks on net when we've got him chasing a little bit. And that's, you know, as good as he has been, and you know, I've seen a lot of sort of stuff about, you know, how good he is on lateral plays. And yeah, off clean lateral plays, it's a real short move for him. He's in the crease. He plays no more than half depth. He's rarely at the edge of his paint. So everything he has to make on a lateral push is a shorter distance, you know, than, you know, that someone like Bobrovsky on the other end who paints around the edges. He's got a lot more distance to cover and has the power to do it. Where you get him scrambling on those down low plays is where that's where you can get him a little out of control and a little extended and stretched out and exposed. And I thought they did that at times. They just didn't generate shots on net off of it. So that's where, if you're the Panthers, you look at that as a positive. And if you're Vegas, you might be a little bit nervous about that, because there were signs at times where he was not keeping up with the play. As much as he got away with one with the big stick reach, there were other signs on cycle plays where he was behind. And let's see if they can take advantage of that in game two, and see if they can create those same types of circumstances again.
What about the other end? What did you like or dislike out of Bobrovsky for Florida?
I actually like Bob. I guess the thing, like, if I was going to compare the two and guess, like, if I would look at just how they played and take away the numbers and the goals that went in, and you were to ask me to guess who was the most nervous on that big stage, I would have guessed Aiden, because of how many times he did get himself in those scramble situations, because of how many times I looked and saw him behind some of those plays we just talked about. And again, some of it is just, hey, that's Florida's pressure and that's the pace they play with, but some of it was a little uncharacteristic. Bob looked like Bob. The difference to me was, especially on those two screen goals, we finally had a team that got traffic and not managed to filter pucks through it. and Shea Theodore did an exceptional job with the one. The second one, the White Cloud one, I think that might have even been an own screen. And those are things we just haven't seen in these playoffs, right? Like Florida, whether it's Florida not giving it up because of how good they are in front of him, or other teams not doing a good enough job of creating it and then getting pucks through. And hey, like it's, you can create all the screens and traffic you want. If you don't have the skill of the defenseman to find lanes and filter those pucks through, it doesn't do you much good. I just don't think we've seen enough of that against Bob in these playoffs. Statistically, it's an area, you know, that he's, I don't say struggled with in the past, but again, everything's relative, right? Like relative to his strengths, it's a relative weakness. And I don't think enough teams have gone after it effectively. It's almost like you need to, you feel like you need to create more dynamic offense against a guy like Bob, and yet that's what he feeds off. If he can see it, even if it's backdoor chances, if he can read, and he reads the game at such a high level, if he can see that pass going back there, he's so explosive and athletic, he's going to give himself a chance to make that save. So as cliched as it is, taking away his eyes, like there are ways to do it, get him into, you know, looking around traffic, having to pick lanes, and manage to filter pucks. I think you'll see more goals. So that's something, if you're Vegas, you're optimistic about. But other than that, honestly, like I thought Bob looked fine. He made some, you know, again, on the bang-bang plays where you expect pucks to go in, you know, even right before the White Cloud goal, a couple of really great chances, he's getting to those. And I think, you know, it's a tough one as a team. Like, what are you going to say? Like, hey, we don't want to stop creating lateral cross-seam passes because this guy's so good at it. You know, of course, you're going to keep trying to create those. But it's nice to mix in something from the point, something with traffic, something that forces him to work a little harder to find the puck than, frankly, I think he's had to up until these points in the playoffs.
Talking all things goaltending with our good friend Kevin Woolley from In Goal Magazine here on TSN 1260 on the Jason Greger Show. You touched on Sean Burke. Let's go back to him, though. You know, Sean Burke seems to be quite the coach when it comes to working with goalies, and he's in Vegas right now. What do you think this potentially could do for him and his future moving forward?
Well, I think it might not do what he wants to do, because like, Sean's been, you know, we've heard him referred to, right, like the year he sort of got back onto the ice in a coaching role with Montreal was the year they went to the Cup Final, right? Like, and we always get to hear the talk about Sean Burke, the goalie whisperer. Like, Sean Burke's a hell of a goalie coach. The problem, and I put air quotes around it, right? Like, problem is I think he'd rather be on the management side of things, and I think that's been well known. Like, there were times where I know there were teams that would have loved to have had him as their goalie coach, but it wasn't a job that he was interested in. And it's a grind, right? Like, not everybody wants to have that day-to-day travel in their job. And Sean's a really bright mind, so I think he, you know, he was looking for other opportunities. He went back on the ice this year with Vegas. They're in the Cup Final. They've done it with five different goalies used. You can talk about Adin Hill and his background and sort of, you know, he's been around for a little while before he got this opportunity. There are things in his game. Listen, the team play in front of him is a big part of this as well, but there are things in his game that he's managing that sort of fit Sean's teachings really well. And I just think it's not a coincidence that they're doing this the way they're doing this with Sean as the goaltending coach this year. And I think it might make it harder for him, as much as I still think there's a really, you know, there's a really bright guy there that deserves a shot on the management side. Man, when you keep having this much success as a goalie coach, it's going to be really hard, you know, to sort of step away from it, frankly. So it's a story that hasn't been told much. Like, I haven't seen a lot about, you know, like, hey, there's a lot about the goaltending and the fact they've used so many and the fact they're here with Adin Hill, but I haven't seen a lot of it tied to Sean. And I'm sorry, but I don't think it's a coincidence. This guy's a hell of a goalie coach. The only downside is I'm not sure he wants to be a goalie coach year in and year out. So, maybe not great for him if he has other aspirations, but I know he's really enjoying it in Vegas this year. And again, I just don't think it's a coincidence that this team is doing it and doing it this way, and Sean's a part of it.
Yeah, it's such a special thing. And lastly, it sounds like after his contract's done with Toronto, of Mike Babcock back in the NHL, first time since 2019. So what does this mean for their kind of hiring process of bringing in a goaltender? And I guess by default, they're goaltenders.
Well, no, I mean, the first to me is the goalie coach. Like, this is fascinating to me to see how this goes. because, you know, obviously Mike Babcock will be the first name, but they let go. You know, they didn't just let go of the coaching, the head coach. They let go of the staff. Actually, I'm not sure about the assistants. I should be careful there. But I know they let go of the goalie coach. They let go of Manny Legacy. So he's not there anymore. They need a replacement. And I know, because I talked to, there are people out there that I think would have been high on that list as potential candidates for that job. Or, and some that, you know, maybe if they weren't, should be. Like really good up-and-coming coaches, coaches with pedigree, coaches with experience, coaches that should fit. Coaches Columbus should want to have that weren't interested in the job before Babcock was hired. Because, again, like, there are 32 gigs. And so on one hand, you'd think that anytime one opens, everybody wants that job. But on the other hand, if it's your first shot, you want to make sure it's a good shot. And if you have enough faith in yourself that, you know, you're eventually going to get your shot, there are guys I talked to that were like, I don't know if I want this to be my first, because you'd be hired by a general manager. Like, how many more decisions does Jarmo Kekäläinen get to make if this doesn't go well? So do you want that to be your first job? You get hired by a guy who you may have questions about his future. And now you add Babcock to the mix. Listen, I don't know Mike Babcock outside of having to stick a microphone in a scrum and ask the odd question. So, but we've heard the stories from the player side, and it's, you know, it's, there's the, you know, the mental warfare stuff, the stories about Marner, other players who have spoken up, obviously the Johan Franz and stuff. Like, this is, you know, the way he coaches is not easy on some of the people around him. And my understanding is that extends to the staff. And so as a goalie coach, you combine those factors. I'm really curious to see where they end up on this hire. I think it's a very important hire for them right now, because the pipeline that they built of up-and-coming goaltenders under Ian Clark when he was their goalie coach before he left and came to Vancouver is starting to run out. And I don't know that they've extended it since he left. And so as that runs out, you know, and you've got Elvis Merzlikins who clearly needs a different voice. Because there's a ton of talent there, but it, you know, things have, like, for a lot of different reasons, haven't gone the way they anticipated. And you walk from Korpisalo. Like, there are a lot of questions around that position, an important position. And so to have a couple of factors that might not net you the best candidate necessarily, or at the very least sort of cuts off candidates who would be very good for an important job, like, to me, you're starting from a tough position already, and I don't know, you know, my hunch is it may have gotten even tougher with the coaching hire, whether it's confirmed or not, if that's indeed what is happening. I don't think that makes it easier to go out and get the best goalie coach you can.
Can't wait to see this plays out, man. We got the finals, and there's a ton of stuff off the ice that has to be dealt with, from ownership down to, you know, the fourth liners had to be signed. So I can't wait to see how this plays out. But thanks for your insight, Woodley, and we'll talk to you later, buddy.
Enjoy the game tonight, Strady. Good to talk to you.